Listening to Something Weird. It's a special episode this week. We are yet again recording together in person.
In the same place.
In the Great Valley of Salt Lake City.
Anna's been spending the weekend here visiting me in my new home, which has been magical. So great opportunity for us to tackle a good topic together.
The most important topic that you will soon be privy to. If you haven't gathered, I'm your co-host Anna, and this is Brooke.
Hey everybody. Here you'll find semi-regular dialogue on all things paranormal, or even just a little bit weird. We're lifelong friends who have had an affinity for the strange since we met, and now we're here to explore these phenomena with you.
Each week, one of us will dig into a paranormal tale as we ponder the question, do we want to believe? And, well, we're both sharing this week.
Yep.
It's a big old fat story time. And like I said, we're going to be touching on potentially one of the most well-known, kind of the mascot of paranormal, or cryptids. I guess aliens are also that. But,
And also kind of the mascot for our friendship in many ways.
Yeah. Truly.
This particular character has been pretty important to us throughout the years and has brought us together.
Yeah, I mean, we were recording a video. Well, we recorded a video, I think I was 13, you were 12.
Sounds right.
Around that time. And we spent a summer filming ourselves looking for Sasquatch. To this day, we still quote things that we said, I guess.
Stupidly said in that movie that we thought were funny.
They are funny. And have drawn many a Sasquatch. It's followed us into some of our actual career endeavors to this day. It's pretty fantastic. He's just a really iconic guy.
And we felt like this was a topic, obviously, when we started this whole thing. We knew we would have to cover Sasquatch at some point, but we wanted to make sure that we were together for it, and that we could evaluate in the most thorough and real Brooke and Anna way.
Yeah, and it's tough. I mean, he's such a well-loved character, known as many things, understood as many things, questioned as many things, and it was difficult to narrow down how we were going to approach this master and commander. But we've all seen the Sasquatch video, but how much do we really know about the origin, history, and fathers of this legendary video? It's probably the video that introduced you to Sasquatch, and it's time that we explored the depths of this tape. It's like the iconic Marilyn Monroe above the steam grate photo, or the thinker. You know it, you love it, you respect it. The film taken in 1967 is less than a minute, but frame 352 is the money shot. And did you know the star of the film is a she?
Did I know?
Did you know that before?
No. I feel like I was reminded of that because of the boobs.
Yeah. I know that I've heard that before, yeah. But I just never really...
Well, I feel like when you say Sasquatch or Bigfoot, you immediately think of, like, a male figure. But that's not...
A father figure.
Yeah. I mean, that's how I think of him. No, you just think male. Like, it's a male creature, whatever. But yeah, it wasn't until we really started researching this that they brought up the boobs, and I was reminded that it was a lady.
Yeah. Her name's Patty.
Cute.
I assume it's after the videographer's namesake.
No.
Kind of put that together.
Makes sense.
I don't know how I feel about... I don't know if this is like, you know, the patriarchy sunk deep into me, but I don't want to see a Sasquatch with boobs.
No.
I also don't want to see...
The man bits of the Sasquatch. Like,
yeah, I just don't really want to encounter, I guess, the like harsh, cold reality of what that might actually be like in person.
Nope.
It's horrifying, so...
I just think of...
Well, that's why they call him Bigfoot.
He's got a third leg.
Oh my gosh.
I'd be beyond
one. Oh, and I go, well, what would you do?
Run!
I would run! Yeah, you would... Oh god. I think I must have blocked that movie out to the Sasquatch. I mean, I clearly can't remember much of anything, but I don't remember watching that Sasquatch movie at all with you.
Yeah, it was a long time ago. We got it from Blockbuster. Those were the favorite place. Or maybe it was Hollywood Video. One of the two. It was awful. But it was all about, like, kind of how the species kind of began. And it was very violent and not a good film.
Trigger warnings.
Yeah.
Well, 50 years later, they are using 4K technology to improve the video and increase visibility. The polished footage just emerged, well, not just emerged, but emerged weeks after the FBI documents confirmed it was, did research into probes about Sasquatch. And, I mean, it was, gosh, a couple months ago, I think they tweeted, they're like, it just said Bigfoot, and then it was all the documents on there.
The FBI tweeted?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I mean, whoever's running their social is...
Gosh, Mulder, I hope.
That goals. I mean, they looked into it. They never really say anything definitive against that, but anyway, I digress. The film has never been debunked fully. I mean, everyone obviously has their own opinions. You know, it's been under the microscope of scientists and analysts and Hollywood special effects experts and pretty much everyone who...
Who would know something.
Yeah. Including us.
So, along with scientists and forensic analysts, we're going to take a stab at looking at who made this video, first and foremost, and what evidence do we have? Was this just the greatest hoax of all time? Or an incredibly lucky chance that they got on video? So to fully investigate the validity of what's referred to as the Bluff Creek footage, we have to look into our filmmakers, who are Roger Patterson and Bob Gimlin. So one thing that's important to note, in just kind of looking in the background of these two individuals, that Patterson and Gimlin had actually been long interested in Sasquatch before their encounter even occurred, and that was primarily based off of early sightings and publications that were released throughout the 50s. That they read. Patterson said he became interested in Bigfoot after reading an article about the creature in True Magazine, which was back in December of 1959. And in 1961, Ivan T. Sanderson also published his encyclopedic Abominable Snowman, Legend Come to Life, which was a worldwide survey of accounts of Bigfoot-type creatures, including recent track finds and other types of evidence, which were all located in the Bluff Creek area in California. After reading that, Patterson is intrigued. So there's been kind of a lot of work done on Patterson, people trying to look into his past, see if he's kind of a credible witness, credible person, that you would want to trust and believe. So there's been biographical pieces on Patterson, and one of them, a quote from that says, quote, in 1962, he visited Bluff Creek and talked with a whole host of Bigfoot believers. In 1964, he returned and met a timber cruiser named Pat Graves, who drove him to Laird Meadows. There, Patterson says, he saw fresh tracks. For him, an almost unbearably exciting, spine-chilling experience. What a tremendous feat it would be. What a scientific breakthrough. If he could obtain unshakable evidence that these tracks were not the work of pranksters, but the actual mark of a hitherto unknown creature, if he succeeded, he would be famous and rich.
Yeah, he would be. Just the way you describe it sounds like a carnival attraction, though. Like,
a little bit.
Like, exciting, spine-chilling experience. Like, that...
Well, I mean, mind you, those are the words of, like, a biographer.
That's
who's
true.
Probably, like, this is his first published work and is really trying to get the attention of his readers.
That's true.
But at the same time, if he succeeded, he would be famous and rich. Like, that's not a good starting point to go into his investigation.
Yeah, that's not ideal.
No.
Kind of reminds me of the old author of The White Salamander.
Yeah, just like, what can I do to get people's attention and to make money?
Yeah. I do remember, actually, when we went, we had our, like, my mom drive us down mm-hmm. to one of the, it was, like, on the Lewis and Clark Trail.
Trail, yeah, in Oregon.
In Oregon. And we took the train, actually. We took mm-hmm. the train down to meet her because she was already there, mm-hmm. like, visiting family. And never really. We spoke to, like, a.
It was a gift shop.
Yeah, it was a yeah. gift shop of Sasquatch.
Yeah.
And just asking people, uh-huh. you know, what's the real legend? Have you seen him? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's pretty...
Do you remember her story?
No,
I don't. Oh my gosh. I, like, still think about it.
My mom actually has a story.
Really?
I'll tell you in just a...
Wait, or was it your mom that told us? The one with the mom picking up the car? I'm pretty sure it was the gift shop woman. Because we went into the gift shop, which was on some, like, weird random mountain road. We were just driving around in the woods.
That was the gift shop
woman. Yeah. And... we asked her, like, what, you know, what are the stories? Have people seen Sasquatch around here? And she said that there was a female Sasquatch, and it was believed that she had, like, children baby or whatever. Little babies.
Sasquatch.
Little babies. Like, think like a mother moose, you know, with, like, her little babies chilling in the back, trying yeah. to cross the road. And she steps in front of a car. The car slams on its brake. She literally picks the car up and flips it around, like, turns it around, and then she and the babies, like, run across the road.
Oh my gosh. No, now I remember.
Yeah.
We got, like, some gold out of that.
Yeah, that was awesome. And remember, we had your mom just, like, take us into the woods, turn mm-hmm. off the car, and just wait?
Yeah, for a while. She was a patient woman. Yeah.
Gosh.
I mean... I only hope if we ever have kids, they're as cool as we were.
Right? I'm gonna make them go on Sasquatch hunts.
I mean, Mom, we just want to play Xbox or just VR or whatever.
Wake them up in the morning. We be looking for Sasquatch. Like always.
You're probably gonna pick up on some of these quotes.
Lots of references you will not understand.
Oh. So, okay.
Okay, so, the point is, the way that he's being presented, at least, like, in the media, is that he saw an opportunity. Now, is that really what happened? We can decide later. So, after Patterson was introduced and visited the sighting places in Bluff Creek, he dedicated much of his time to writing a book. And that book was called Do Abominable Snowmen of America Really Exist? And it was self-published... in 1966.
Dang.
Good for him.
I'm wondering, like, what self-publishing looked like back then. I mean, just typing it out. Just
literally typing it.
Binding it.
And then taking it
to, like, the local mercantile. I know that people do it on Amazon all the time now, and it's right. apparently actually really lucrative.
Really?
Yeah, it can be.
Because no publishing house is going to be like, and we want this to our name, and this shit on UFOs.
Taken by Sasquatch, an erotic novel.
Okay, so he self-publishes his book in 1966. The book has been characterized as, quote, little more than a collection of newspaper clippings laced together with Patterson's circus poster-style prose.
Yes! Okay, so he was all about that
yeah.
bone-chilling, spine-tingling. Man, I would be self-publishing all the time.
We should look for it. We should get a copy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll bet that's worth a lot of money.
I know. The book, however, contains 20 pages of previously unpublished interviews and letters, 17 drawings by Patterson of the encounters described in the text, 5 hand-drawn maps, and almost 20 photos and illustrations from other sources.
Holy sh! This sounds like a gold mine.
Yeah.
Like, all right.
Okay.
Gonna do some digging around for that.
He wrote a book in 1966, but that wasn't enough for him. He didn't stop there. So naturally, he decided he needed to make a movie.
Wait, what year was this?
1966. I know. Oh, fuck you. Oh, gosh.
You're like, you are literally fucking looking at the screen right
now. We're reading the same document.
You're so annoying.
So anyway, he made a movie.
He made a movie, which is exactly what we decided to do.
I mean, it's a pretty human response.
Yeah.
I guess.
If you want to find Sasquatch, make a movie. Document your searches.
Yeah.
I get it, Patterson.
Whoa, okay. Yeah. Okay, this is wild.
Anna's on board. So in May and June of 1967, Patterson began filming a docudrama, or pseudo-documentary, about cowboys being led by an old miner and a wise Native American tracker on a hunt for Bigfoot.
Oh my gosh.
The storyline called for Patterson and his Native American guide, who was our other filmmaker, Bob Gimlin, wearing a wig.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
So inappropriate.
This gets more and more, though, similar to, like, antics of a middle school.
13-year-old girls.
All right, Bob, you go over there. Put the wig on.
Put the wig on. You're our spirit guide.
Terrible.
So bad. Yeah, remember, we're in the 60s.
Yeah.
So you have Patterson, who is one of the cowboys, who's being led by Gimlin in a wig, playing the Native American spirit guide, and the cowboys are required to recall, in a series of flashbacks, the stories of Fred Beck, who apparently is a character in the famous 1924 Ape Canyon incident, we'll put a pin in that, and others as they track the beast on horseback.
I'm just imagining Patterson, like, recruiting his buddies down, like, at the bar. Like, hey, guys.
Want to make a quick buck? I got something for you.
These are all adults, too. Like, I love it.
And just for reference, this is not something that I knew about. Maybe you did, Anna. Have you heard of the Ape Canyon incident? It was in 1924.
No, tell me.
This is real quick. We're not going to get into this because it's too much of a rabbit hole. But Ape Canyon is a canyon in Mount St. Helens.
I've been there.
Really?
Yeah, I went into, Ape Caverns.
Sure.
Which might be something different, but it's at St. Helens.
Yeah, there's the Ape Cave.
Yeah, the Ape Caves.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
So there in 1924, there was reportedly a very violent encounter between a group of miners and a group of what are believed to be Bigfoots.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, I was on sacred ground.
You were. So in the film that Patterson is making, the cowboys are having flashbacks to that particular instance to help them track and find Sasquatch.
This sounds like a great movie.
I know. I'd watch it.
Someone do a reboot.
So for the actors and the cameraman, Patterson used at least 9 volunteer acquaintances. Mm-hmm. Not friends.
Just people. Jumped on TaskRabbit.
Which included Bob Gimlin, which we already talked about. And Bob Aronimus, I think is how you say it, for 3 days of shooting. I would like to find this movie. It sounds money.
That would be the best. I'd be the best. That'd be great.
Yes. Well said. sorry. Okay, so moving into the summer of 1967, apparently after getting $700 from the Radfords, whatever that is, and shooting some of his documentary, Patterson and his new neighbor, Jerry Lee Merritt, who was a famous musician that happened to move to Yakima, where he's from, and became Patterson's new neighbor, they teamed up. Jerry Lee Merritt was actually a big believer.
Okay.
And they teamed up and tried over and over to attract investors to help further fund the Bigfoot movie. Unfortunately, they were unsuccessful.
I'm kind of surprised. If you're a famous musician, mm-hmm. and whether or not someone really, like, believes in the same thing as uh-huh. kind of a passion project, I guess celebrity, though, is a little bit different now than it may
yeah,
have
than
been.
It was. While they couldn't get their funding for the film, they did make an important step, and it was the summer of 1967 that they copyrighted or trademarked the term Bigfoot.
I mean, there's your claim to fame, guys.
Yeah.
You know, just...
That's enough.
Like, I wonder...
Go to bed.
Anyone who now puts things out, though, like, there's so much Bigfoot paraphernalia.
Well, trademarks expire, too.
Oh, fuck.
So, maybe...
if you would have just stopped running around, putting wigs on your friends, you could have just sit back.
Made bank.
Seriously.
That'd be crazy. So even though they didn't have a lot of success getting the funding that they needed for the film, they were determined. They weren't going to let that stop them. So in October now of 1967, Patterson and his friend Gimlin set out for the Six Rivers National Forest in the far northern California area. They drove in Gimlin's truck, carrying his provisions and three horses. Patterson chose the area because of intermittent reports of the creatures in the past, like sightings of Sasquatch, mm-hmm. and their enormous footprints had been found there dating back to 1958, which is how he originally became interested in okay. all of this. And this is where we go into the encounter.
Oof.
So I'm going to give you a relatively quick rundown of what happened on the afternoon of Friday, October 20th, 1967. Patterson and Gimlin were riding upstream on horseback along the east bank of Bluff Creek. At some time between 1:15 and 1:40 p.m., they, quote, came to an overturned tree with a large root system at a turn in the creek, almost as high as a room. When they rounded it, there was a log jam, which I guess is referred to as a crow's nest, that was left over from the flood of 64. It was at that point that they spotted the figure behind it nearly simultaneously. So according to Patterson and Gimlin, it was either, quote, crouching beside the creek to their left, or, quote, standing there on the opposite bank. Gimlin later described himself as in a mild state of shock after seeing the figure. Like, no shit. I, like, pooped myself.
Well, yeah, it's scary enough when you, like, encounter
an animal.
Or just even another hiker or
sure.
person. Or even sometimes, like, a tree that looks like a person. A little spooky. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Like, of course you're shocked. Patterson initially estimated its height at 6 feet 6 inches, and later raised his estimate to about 7 feet 6 inches. No reason why.
Okay.
Some later analysts and anthropologists have suggested Patterson's later estimate was about 1 foot too tall.
Little shit. You should have just stuck with the original story.
Stick with the original. Gimlin always maintained that the estimate was around 6 feet. So, all right. Good for you. In the actual film, the film shows what Patterson and Gimlin claim to be a large, hairy, bipedal, ape-like figure with short, silvery brown or dark reddish brown or black hair covering most of its body. Including its very prominent breasts.
Now I'm just kind of imagining, like, these guys being like, all right, Sasquatch, but make it hot.
But had some, like, really big.
Big boobs. Gotta be huge. But it's, like, also such a, I mean, this is also really, just generalizing, but, like, for men to be like, yeah, their hair was, like, silvery brown or dark reddish brown or black.
Maybe it was, like, black.
I mean, that's actually pretty realistic.
Like, that's true. But I will say, even if they're, like, gonna take this thing and be like, let's add boobs, they made them hairy. I don't think that that's something anyone wants to see.
Hairy boobs?
Hairy boobs.
Not, I mean, no. Not that I know of, but I don't speak for all of humanity.
So their description, although kind of vague and strange, the figure description in the film and what you see in the film generally matches the descriptions of Bigfoot offered by others who have claimed to have seen one. Mm-hmm. Patterson estimated he was about 25 feet away from the creature at his closest, so never getting closer than 25 feet. Patterson said that his horse reared up upon sensing the figure, and he spent about 20 seconds getting himself off of the horse, getting control of the horse once again, and then getting around to its other side, where he was able to get the camera from the saddlebag before he could run towards the figure while operating his camera. So just kind of giving us a timeline of how much time has passed.
And that makes sense. Mm-hmm. If anyone has ever been around horses, they get spooked and
yeah, they know.
It wouldn't be like the perfect scenario.
No, it's not gonna, like, stand there and be chill while you take your camera out, and then you can just, like, sit and watch.
Posing.
Yeah. So as soon as he takes the camera out, he yells, quote, cover me to Gimlin, meaning to get the gun out and cover him. Gimlin crossed the creek on horseback after Patterson had run well beyond it, riding on a path somewhat to the left of Patterson's and somewhat beyond his position, so he's trying to kind of stay with him,
mm-hmm.
kind of in parallel. The figure had walked away from them before Patterson began to run after it. The resulting film is initially quite shaky. Of course, he's running. At that point, the figure glanced over its right shoulder at the men, and Patterson fell to his knees. While talking with researcher John Green, Patterson would later characterize the creature's expression as one of content and disgust. You know how it is when the umpire tells you one more word and you're out of the game. That's the way it felt.
I am dying. Like, can you just side eye?
Just like,
and just like, off. And now you can, but you kind of, when you watch the video, when the Sasquatch turns around, it's like, you can sense that. Yeah. Like, it is not impressive. It's like, go away.
Yeah.
I have felt that many a time. Oh my gosh, this is wild. It's
so
good.
Yeah. So shortly after this point, the steady middle portion of the film begins, containing the famous look back. Shortly after glancing over its shoulder on the film, the creature disappeared behind a grove of trees for about 14 seconds, then reappeared in the film's final 15 seconds. Gimlin remounted and followed it on horseback, keeping his distance, until it disappeared around a bend in the road. Patterson called him back at that point, feeling vulnerable on foot without a rifle, because he feared the creature's mate might approach.
Like, he wasn't concerned about this apparently 7'6" creature anyway. Like,
no.
You really, like, have to wait for enough. Its mate to come out.
Yeah. And females, like, in the animal kingdom are often more aggressive than a male mate would be.
Yeah.
Because females babies. Are like, don't fuck with my babies. So the entire encounter lasted less than 2 minutes. Next, Gimlin and Patterson rounded up their horses, who had taken off in the opposite direction downstream before they actually started filming. And Patterson got his second roll of film from a saddlebag and started to film the track.
It's so much more action-packed.
Yeah, well, it's so
than
much...
than I'd imagined.
I feel like it's so much more human. You know, it kind of, like, adds a layer of... Yeah, I could see that
exactly
happening.
How you would react. You know, you're running, no wonder it's shaky, it's mm-hmm. not going to be this perfect shot. And then, like, the mixture of fear and mm-hmm. then disbelief and...
Yeah, like, it their account makes sense to me.
It does. I guess I just always imagined it being...
I honestly just thought it was Patterson in the woods. Like, I thought he was just in the woods.
Yeah.
Alone, and it was just like, I'm walking, there's the thing, there's my camera. Like, yeah. I did not know the background and the setup. To any of this.
Yeah.
Of what was going on. It's like, kind of makes me a little hesitant that they were literally filming a movie about Sasquatch.
Yeah.
When this encounter happened. But
yeah, it's tough. And it's all of the different aspects surrounding it that,
mm-hmm.
It's a tough one. But the whole aspect of it looking back, and like, looking at them so shitty, like yeah. daggers for eyes. I mean, if looks could kill, he fell to his knees.
Yeah. I kind of love that. She's a crazy bitch.
Well, can you imagine? I'd be so annoyed.
Oh, I'd be so
two
pissed.
Two little shits running
well, like,
after
any
the
time
forest.
Two creepers even look at me, I'm like,
yeah.
fuck off.
And especially if they had a video camera and yeah. were running after you and telling their friends to get their guns out. Oh, man. Yeah,
I yeah,
would
I
not
get it,
be
Patty.
Yeah,
I get
Patty,
it.
You poor girl. I'm sorry. For what the world has done to you.
Living in a man's world.
So, that's a big... I mean, that's a huge moment. Whether real or fake, I mean, you're putting it out there. Is this, like, this is
what happens.
This is what happens. Mm-hmm. So, according to Patterson and Gimlin, they were the only witnesses to this encounter of what they claimed was Sasquatch or Patty. And their statements were generally the same. There were a couple of, like, a number of inconsistencies. that different authors have pointed out, specifically Greg Long, says they offer different sequences in how the horses reacted on seeing the Sasquatch. And Patterson, you know, obviously the size was, in the end, 2 feet taller than what Gimlin was saying.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if clearly I would be the worst person to ever give an account of anything, because I can't remember what happened, like, yesterday. Like, you're going to have different stories in that scenario.
Yeah.
It would be actually weird if they said the exact same thing. Like, I would be even more suspicious.
Yeah. That's my reaction. Just in researching this, so many people that were like, well, they said two different heights, or they said this, and this one said this about, like, the fucking horse's reaction.
Well, they were different horses.
They're different horses, first of all.
And it sounds like they were in different places.
Yeah, like they weren't even next to each other. And it bugs me. That's not how memory works.
No, and I mean, it reminds me of, you know, asshole detectives who brush over a case because stories don't add up. And then they find out, you know, later, well, actually, this really did happen. And I'm speaking more along the lines of, like, crime.
Yeah. Well, and that's, like, we talk a lot about this in psychology in eyewitness testimonies, because they're one of the most inconsistent pieces of evidence that are used, but we rely on them so much, like, at least in our justice system. Human emotion and memory don't actually work that well together. It's one of those, like, it's really, really good until it's bad.
Yeah.
So it's like you have enough adrenaline and cortisol and your memory's like on fire. But as soon as you, like we were talking about, as soon as you break that threshold, then it actually damages your ability to recall. So it's like, why would you, it just pisses me off.
I mean, it's also scientifically proven.
Yeah.
Like, people block we out know trauma. This.
Yeah.
You know, whether that be something as natural as childbirth to blocking out memories that you just cannot deal with.
Make sense of.
Yeah.
And if you're in this, like, heightened state, like, heightened emotional state, your ability to recall is now impaired. So, just go fuck yourself. I just think it's...
Yeah, Long, you suck. This guy.
Whatever.
Hater.
Okay.
Defenders of the film and Patterson and Gimlin's work say that commercially motivated hoaxers would have gotten their story straight. So it's basically what we were saying. If you wanted the large public to be like, well, yes, that absolutely makes sense, then you would get your stories straight. So they're, you know, they've gone back, told their story, and this isn't like now where you can just pull up your iPhone and just show and upload it to YouTube. They had to get the film developed. So once the film was developed, Patterson was stoked. He was amped. And rightfully so. It was evidence of what they had just seen.
Yeah.
Bob, though, wasn't impressed. He said, when I first saw the film, I thought, shit, that ain't nothing. I said, I saw a lot more than that, so I was kind of a bad guy. Which, also, understandable, because he's probably thinking, this isn't good enough, like, to support our claims.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't, like you said, he saw way more, so.
Which, I mean, he isn't wrong. People still don't believe it.
Yeah.
Like it.
So that was kind of their disagreement on the film and and the outcome was kind of the start of a crack in their friendship.
Oh.
So after the film was developed, they hit the road and they got to sharing it and trying to find investors to sell their probably initial story to Hollywood. But Bob just wasn't that into it, was concerned with ranch life back at home, and wanted to take care of his horses, so he went back. It's kind of funny. You can kind of see they're two very different personalities, much like us.
Yeah.
You know, I can just see how those
I feel like I'd be the Bob.
Yeah.
Like, I get Bob.
Yeah.
Just to, like, this isn't quite enough. I'm gonna let it go.
Yeah. And, like, I would be,
I'm more than
like,
person,
let's fucking go to L.A.
Yeah.
It just, I get it, and it's tough, but I would never let that ruin our friendship.
No. No way.
Patterson, though, like, basically said, I'm gonna do this without you then. Which I think is fair enough, but super shitty. He hired a guy to go along with him to be Bob.
What?
Yeah. Bob said...
Did he put him in a wig?
Yeah, Bob said he hired some guy that said he was me and was just shook from it.
Oh, I would be fucking pissed.
Like, I just get some... I'm like, this is Brooke Miller, nay Healy.
Yeah.
And, that'd be so awful.
I would be so mad.
It'd be one thing if he got permission or something, but clearly he did not. Patterson partnered with his brother-in-law, Al D'Atley. So they took the film on a national tour. They wanted to raise funds for a full-fledged expedition so they could go back to Bluff Creek and probably, you know, do a number on the area, which now it's getting to be like...
Oh, it's overrun.
Yeah.
I'll talk about that at the end.
So sad.
Yeah.
So the brother-in-law, Patterson, and Gimlin, they all took equal shares in the film, which, okay, why is D'Atley getting any share?
Right.
It seems weird. And Gimlin actually started to feel edged out and sold his share of the rights for less than $10 to another researcher.
Mm, yeah.
That was it for the fearsome twosome. They didn't speak until basically Patterson was dying of cancer at age 39. And they spoke on when he was at his deathbed. Bob recalls, in quote, "His brothers called me and said, 'Bob, he's asked to see you.' So I went to see a little old dried up guy there in the bed, and he rallied up a little. 'Bob,' he said, 'I apologize. I've got the money and the means and the equipment.' He said, 'As quick as I get well, you and I are going down to California and capture a Bigfoot.' Well, that was in the afternoon, and he was dead in the next morning."
Oh, that gives me chills.
Yeah. Now we're just, like, picturing it.
I know. No.
Brooke,
don't leave me.
I'm sorry. Okay. So, Gimlin says he forgave Patterson at that point. But he was still pretty pissed off, I guess. Like, forgive, don't forget. At that point, Patterson had probably made a good amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
And Gimlin sees that a lot of other people had made money from his work, too. Not only that, though, like, the money side, whatever. But he was also dealing with a lot of shit from people. Mockery, as we've seen in so many other scenarios.
Always the case. People are so mean.
Yeah. He says that people would come into his driveway in the middle of the night and, like, yell things, asking if he'd take them Bigfoot hunting. I mean, I would like him to take me Bigfoot
I would genuinely
hunting.
Ask him to do
but
that.
I wouldn't, but yeah, I think the, like, middle of the night screaming. His wife was also dealing with the ridicule, and she worked at a bank, so it was very public, and
yeah.
It just, like, they hit a breaking point.
Mm.
And she'd just come home, like, crying and saying that she was, like, upset that he'd ever gone down with Patterson to do the video, and, you know, she's just getting a lot of flack.
She didn't sign up for it.
So, at that point, Gimlin was like, "All right, Bigfoot, you're dead to me. You're like, you're nothing." So he disowned him. He stopped doing interviews and answering any questions or mail about Sasquatch and just didn't talk about the encounter or anything Sasquatch related for 35 years. But in 2003, he met Dmitry Bayanov, a Russian scientist.
Ooh.
Bayanov had written about Sasquatch, well, about Sasquatch as well as what they call the Russian snowman. I assume that's kind of like a Yeti or
like
you know, their, yeah.
Yeah,
their version.
Okay.
So he came to the U.S. to go to a conference in California and somehow convinced Bob to go along with him.
Hmm.
Gimlin basically agreed to come out of the shadows and tell the story of their sighting.
Hmm.
Super nervous because if you've ever spoken at a conference or in any public speaking scenario, like, that's going to be nerve-wracking.
Yeah.
And he was probably just waiting to be, like, laughed off the stage.
Mm-hmm.
But then he heard it. And wild applause.
Nice.
And that makes me happy.
Yes. Because,
and Bob says, "It was like lifting a weight off my shoulders. Here's all these people just anxious to hear what went on and believed in me. And when I walked in the room, standing ovation. And I thought, wait a minute, how did this turn around in a few days?"
In a few days. It's been 35 years, Bob. What?
I think probably, like, another time during the conference.
Oh, okay.
He probably, like, walked into the room and people were like...
Got it.
You're okay. Like, all right, memory definitely does serve us all differently, Bob, but... Yet again, Bigfoot came into Bob's life and really changed it. Not only was he, like, accepted by this community that's developed over the years, but he's a god. He is.
Yeah. Like, it's the footage.
It is the footage. I also do like that, you know, he was quiet for 35 years.
Mm-hmm.
It almost says more to me that he did not know the potential reach during that time.
Yeah.
So he started going to conferences again and giving interviews and signing autographs. He just had a new lease on life. So Bob just kind of wraps it up. He's still doing, you know, these tours, and he's even doing some, like, guest speaking on podcasts. Like, I saw that he did a couple. I mean, that's just amazing.
That's like, I'm good to die. Like, the, yeah. What?
Fangirl.
That's amazing.
Yeah. He says... I strongly believe that if a real one walked in the house and sat down at a table, or the best it could, they'd say, no, it's a fake. It's somebody in a suit. That's how naive they are. So that's just the way I'd tell them until the day they spank me in the face with dirt.
What? What? What does that even mean, Bob? They spank me in the face with dirt?
I'm, like, trying to envision how you could spank someone.
How do you
spank someone? And it is kind of, that's his outlook. If you don't believe me, whatever, like, you're just never going to believe me. I agree to an extent. Like, there are people who are so skeptical, even when proof is right in front of them. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just the world we live in, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's like, we don't like things that don't make sense. So, if we can't make sense of it, we'll just say no.
It's tough, too, because then on the other hand, you have people who will believe anything and everything on no basis.
Right.
Or very much proven to be fake or whatnot. Yeah. It's tough. So Gimlin is a baller and he doesn't really care what you think anymore because bang me in the face with dirt. Do whatever you want. I believe.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Kind of going into this next segment, I guess, or just this next stage. We're going to be taking a look at kind of the different studies in favor of Sasquatch, and there have been many, but we're just going to look at the main hyped ones. Dmitry Donskoy, so he was the chief of the Department of Biomechanics at the USSR Central Institute of Physical Culture, later associated with Moscow's Darwin Museum. He conducted an academic study of the film and basically came up with it being a non-human on the basis of its weight, its gait, which he said it'd be really difficult for a human to replicate. Like, you just, no matter how you're loping or walking, would be almost impossible for someone to walk that way.
To walk like that.
So.
At that, like, stature.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
From the way its legs and arms were so, like, thick, I guess, along with the flatness of the way it walked, it just, like, all of the aspects that he noted just couldn't have made it a human. And he said it's well coordinated. So Patty is well coordinated. Like,
yeah,
it wasn't
she can
just
move.
I mean, she was out of there.
Yeah.
And one item that he mentioned specifically, like, as part of that was that the arm motion and glide resembled a cross country skier's, which generally when we're walking, we're not walking like we're
that gives us the famous
the the movement.
That's awesome.
So there's Dmitry Donskoy, specifically interested in the way people walk. We've also got Jeff Glickman, who's a certified forensic examiner, and he performed intensive computer analysis of the film over 3 years and came out with a 43-page study written in scientific format. Basically gave estimated measures of the Sasquatch, giving like a really high weight estimate that apparently a lot of people won't accept. He obviously wasn't able to find any evidence of it being super real or super fake, but notes several things that indicate its authenticity. Those notes can be found in published works.
Okay.
And then we also have Grover Krantz, who's an anthropologist and initially one of our skeptics when he first saw photos in Argosy magazine. But when he saw the film in 69, he changed his tune because the realism of the creature's locomotion impressed him.
So I was impressed.
I liked watching her walk. So later, Grant examined the film, concluding that the film depicts an actual creature. It's unknown, but it's real. And his argument is based on the Sasquatch walk. Again, kind of going back to Dimitri, Krantz basically says the way it moves could not be replicated by a human and could not have been duplicated by a person wearing a gorilla suit. If anyone's ever been in costume, like something annoying is wearing that thing would be, you would not be coordinated.
Right, you would not have this like fluid movement that everyone keeps talking about.
Yeah, you'd probably like fall over and go ass over head. Yeah. But... So Krantz also noted just how wide Sasquatch's shoulders would be. Even in its, like, walking height, it was a little bit kind of, like, crouched and like, slumping over, as you can see in the video.
Mm-hmm.
He's just saying, like, the shoulders, even slumped over, are 50% bigger or wider than any human's. I guess you're just looking at an average
male or average woman.
Female, yeah. I guess. For comparison, Andre the Giant had a typical human ratio of 24%.
Hmm.
Andre the Giant was big and only had a ratio of 24%. Hmm. So, Krantz also, like, along with other people who have studied the film, just describe and, like, point out how natural the, like, musculature under the skin and fur looks.
Right.
Like, when you're looking at it, it does not look like a suit.
Yeah, and that's how I've always thought. Like, the claims that it's a suit, it's, like, it's not saggy. It's not hanging off of the, like, person's body. That is, like, a thick lady.
And you see, you see the muscles moving.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't see that in clothes.
Right.
Unless it's, like, skin tight. Mm-hmm. And then through something like furry, you wouldn't be able to see that at all.
But you can see it.
And then, just specifically though, the muscles of the buttocks were distinct.
Oh, okay.
That's a pretty standout argument.
Well, it seems easier to change the way that you're walking,
your gait,
than it is to mimic
flesh and muscles.
Yeah, and muscle, like, through a suit. That would be so difficult. And
it's just, like,
it's
physics.
It's also 67. Like, we don't have, at least not that I'm aware of, you don't have this type of special effects that we use in movies today.
No, and I remember reading when we were doing research, like, Planet of the Apes had just recently come out, the very first one. Someone said that when they were watching Planet of the Apes, they were like, it looks like, just, you know,
it's bad special effects.
And tons of money went into that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, these guys clearly didn't have any money.
Yeah.
Because they couldn't get anyone to buy in. If you're comparing, like, apples to apples, then basically shot down your own argument because their special effects were total crap.
Right.
And in the wise words of Tenacious D, no fucking way, no, you know he's real.
Could it be a man in gorilla suit?
No fucking way. No, you know he's real. Real.
Okay, even with all of the studies and evidence in favor, we gotta look at the skeptics. We always have to. We have to give them their fair time. These are the people that would say it is just a man in a gorilla suit. So some prominent studies that have been conducted that would say, no, this probably is not real. So a prominent primate expert, John Napier, was one of the few mainstream scientists that offered a pretty harsh critique of the Patterson-Gimlin film, but also studied the Bigfoot evidence in a relatively general matter by publishing a book in 1973 called Bigfoot, the Sasquatch, and Yeti in Myth and Reality. So he took kind of a dual view, like, what is the evidence that's out there worldwide, and then tried to apply it to the Patterson-Gimlin footage to see, could this be real?
Yeah.
He conceded the likelihood of Bigfoot as a real creature, stating that, quote, I am convinced that Sasquatch does exist, but he argues against the film being genuine. He says that there is little doubt that the scientific evidence taken collectively points to a hoax of some kind. The creature shown in the film does not stand up well to functional analysis, which I guess he did. I kind of respect his point of view.
Yeah.
He's not denying the existence, but he's saying we don't have enough evidence in this film to say that it's legit.
No, and I think that's important to be able to look at all aspects and say, sure, I'm going to be open-minded, but this isn't good enough.
Yeah.
That's fair.
I think that's fair. So he lists out specific reasons for why he's skeptical of the film. First, he says the length of the footprints are totally at variance with its calculated height. So the foot just is either too big or too small for the claimed height. And second, the footprints are of the hourglass type, which he is suspicious of. Quite honestly, I don't know what that means.
Like the way that it's shaped, I assume?
Yeah, that it's going wide, skinny, wide.
Okay.
Like an hourglass. I mean, we don't know. That's the thing. Like, yeah. We've never captured one. We've never studied one. We've never looked at the anatomy. So it's like, to make these comparisons to humans is a little unfair.
Yeah.
Say,
well, it's like pulling up one of those deep sea creatures and being like, yeah, but it doesn't look like a dolphin. Right. And it doesn't swim like different. A shark. Well.
Because it's not a dolphin or a fucking shark.
Yeah.
He did also kind of touch on the issue of, again, is this a man in a gorilla suit? And he says, quote, I could not see the zipper, and I still can't, like, actually watching the footage. There's no evidence of a zipper. There I think we must leave the matter. Perhaps it was a man dressed up in a monkey skin. If so, it was brilliantly executed, and the unknown perpetrator will take his place with the great hoaxers of the world. Perhaps it was the first film of a new type of hominid, quite unknown to science, in which case Roger Patterson deserves to go down in history, essentially, as, like, a major discoverer in anthropology. So that's kind of where he leaves it.
But that's kind of like, choose a side, it's kind of a Napier. Cop-out. You don't have to choose a side, but that really tells us nothing, and he fluffed it up with a bunch of fancy words.
Ultimately, I feel like he's just saying, I don't know.
Yeah.
And he's leaving it there.
Also, though, who, like, where do you come across a monkey skin in 1960s Yakima?
Right.
Like, and also, the height, they're all saying that, so if it's wearing a monkey's skin, you couldn't fake, like, that might explain the muscles showing and whatnot, but it doesn't explain the actual size of Sasquatch. Like, everyone's saying it's huge.
It's huge, and its shoulders are huge, and its walk is huge, and all of this stuff. So, if you're, like, you would have to have an awesome monkey skin that, like, forms to muscles, and then on top of that, you would have to have the structure underneath on top of a normal human body to replicate this giant thing.
Also, just have to have a monkey skin.
Yeah. Which... okay, let me tell you about another skeptic here. Kind of going, kind of on the same train as our Napier, whatever his name is. David Dageling and Daniel O. Schmidt were anthropologists at the University of Florida. And they examined the film and together concluded it was impossible to conclusively determine if the subject in the film is non-human. And additionally argued that flaws in the studies by Krantz, who we covered, and others invalidated their claims. It's just a bunch of bullshit that's out there. So Dageling and Schmidt noted problems in the subject and the camera positions, the camera movement, and poor image quality. They concluded, quote, based on our analysis of gait and problems inherent in estimating the subject's dimensions, it is our opinion that it is not possible to evaluate the identity of the film subject with any confidence.
Okay, so they're also, they can't say anything.
They can't, either. They don't know. Dageling notes in 1967, movie and television special effects were primitive compared to the special effects that would come to be in later decades, which we just talked about. and allows that if the Patterson film depicts a man in a suit, that it, quote, is not unreasonable to suggest that it is better than some of the tackier monster outfits that got thrown together for television at the time.
So, all right, Dageling. Yes. Fuck you, though. Thrown together.
Yeah, like, that was, like, people's jobs.
And not thrown together. This is Hollywood, and at this point, like, people are paying lots of money and spending a lot of time to do this. Like, yeah, it might look thrown together to us now, but I can't even put together a Halloween costume worth its weight. So I'd like to see what you can do, Dageling.
Well, it's just frustrating that pretty much any of the skeptics or the naysayers, all they could say was, there's just not enough evidence. Nothing was conclusive saying, like, this isn't real.
Yeah.
Nothing.
And that's why it can't be, it's has yet to be debunked. There's nothing to say that it can't be something.
All right. On the topic of the special effects and this whole argument that this is just a guy dressed up in a gorilla suit, yada, 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 we have to talk about Philip Morris. Philip Morris is the owner of Morris Costumes, which is a North Carolina-based company, and in 2002 came out and claimed that he made a gorilla costume that was used in the Patterson film. So, in my opinion, like, his testimony is probably more valuable than any of the shit that the scientists have done at this point.
Well, yeah, you know, at least he's saying,
like, I did this. He might be lying, but Morris said he discussed his role in the hoax at costume conventions, lectures, magician conventions in the 1980s, but he didn't come public with the fact that he supposedly made the costume until 2002. Morris claims he was reluctant to expose the hoax earlier for fear of harming his business, because I guess it's known in the costumer's world that, like, being part of a hoax is a, it's a no-no. You're not going to be as reputable. Whatever. I don't know.
All right.
Okay.
God.
When he made the initial claim in 2002, he said that he sold an ape suit to Patterson via mail order in 1967, thinking it was going to be used in what Patterson described as a prank. After the initial sale, Morris said Patterson called him on the phone, asking him how to make the shoulders more massive and the arms longer. Morris says that he suggested that whoever wore the suit should wear football shoulder pads and hold sticks in his hands within the suit. As for the creature's walk, Morris said, quote, the Bigfoot researchers say that no human can walk that way in the film. Oh, yes, they can. When you're wearing long clown's feet, you can't place the ball of your foot down first. You have to put your foot down flat. Otherwise, you'll stumble. Another thing, when you put on the gorilla head, you can only turn your head maybe a quarter of the way. And to look behind you, you've got to turn your head and your shoulders and your hips. Plus, the shoulder pads in the suit are in the way of the jaw. That's why the Bigfoot turns and looks the way that he does. It's she, bitch. Looks the way that he does in the film. He has to twist his entire upper body. But still, you're saying that you have to have sticks to elongate your arms? You can see, like, the meat of her arms throughout her. You can see it.
Yeah, it's not like a fur purse. I'm like, have you even watched this man?
I know. It sounds like he hasn't even watched it. Like, it, I don't know. Morris's wife and business partner, Amy, has vouched for her husband's claims that he helped, like, make and kind of create this whole hoax. Morris offered no evidence apart from his own testimony to support his account of what happened. And probably the biggest issue with his entire claim is that there is zero evidence that a gorilla suit was created and sold in 1967. According to his business, this never happened.
Okay, so,
or business records, this never happened.
And why wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Like, he really did. He's the cream of the crop when it comes to costume makers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's clearly a business. You would think that something that costly and time-consuming to make, I would assume he'd want some record of it.
Right.
Who
knows? But it sounds like he's just going back and saying, well, I didn't want anyone to know that I was going to be part of a hoax. And if that's really how you felt, then why didn't you tell Patterson to go fuck himself? Like, why would you even do this in the first place? If you're that, like, good of a costume maker or whatever. But ultimately, that's all we have. People study it. No one has anything conclusive. We have Philip Morris, who makes one claim, but who knows if his testimony is true. Ultimately, we're over 50 years later of the Bluff Creek footage, and it's still one of the most commonly viewed, studied, and argued over pieces of evidence in terms of, is Sasquatch real? So this grainy, shaky footage helped elevate Sasquatch to one of, if not, I would argue, the most sought after and famous cryptids that we have out there.
Yeah.
In 2017, that was the official celebration of the 50-year anniversary of the famous footage, and a celebration was held at Bluff Creek, which brought together Sasquatch believers from near and far. A little bit upset we didn't know about this.
Yeah.
And go.
That's okay. Super depressing. I guess I'll get over it one day.
So, Stephen Strufert, who is the owner of a used bookstore called Bigfoot Books in Willow Creek, California, he says that there are still sightings reported to this day in the area. Strufert is also one of the founders of the Bluff Creek Project, which is an effort by a handful of volunteers to set up as many as 20 HD cameras in and around the site where the Patterson-Gimlin footage was captured. So today, the project's primary goal is pretty straightforward. They want to, quote, determine if Bigfoot is real. So what they do is they use GPS coordinates, and they have been able to identify surviving trees and other landmarks from the footage that led to the rediscovery of the official film site, which they found in 2011.
That's wild.
That's crazy. So since then, it's been under near constant surveillance using these HD cameras, even though the actual spot on Bluff Creek is closed to visitors from October through June.
Wow. That's a big chunk of time, too, that it's closed off to people.
Yeah. Well, probably just for
safety. And whatnot. But still, it's a long time.
So they say that their cameras are running 24/7 year-round. If Bigfoot is out there, we should be able to find one on our HD videos one of these years. So far, the cameras have captured pretty cool footage of cougars, bears, and the rare Humboldt marten. I don't know what that is.
It's like a marmot, kind of.
Oh, cute. But no Bigfoot. However, the lack of any new Sasquatch sightings doesn't bother the team. And honestly, doesn't bother me either. It sounds like that place is,
like, overrun.
Yeah, like, there's a little too much focus. So any animal is going to understand that, like, they're at risk.
Well, it's like trying to go to Area 51 to see an alien. Like, it's like, come on. No. It's cool because it has historical significance, but it's really unlikely that you're going to be seeing anything of consequence.
Mm-hmm. And sightings of Sasquatch are not centralized to one area. It's literally all over the world.
Yeah.
So why focus on one area?
Skookum County, which is actually very close to where we live or where mm-hmm. we grew up in Pierce County, that has, I think, the highest Sasquatch sightings per capita, like, in the U.S.
Yeah. There was just a Sasquatch sighting here in Utah, like, 6 months ago.
Yeah. Who knows? I mean, it could be all different types and... Mm-hmm.
We don't know. Patty may still be out there somewhere, but I don't think that she's the only one, and I don't think we need to limit ourselves to that particular sighting to draw any conclusions about whether or not Sasquatch is real. That's the Bluff Creek Patterson-Gimlin footage.
So I guess now knowing, and it is amazing that neither of us really did know much about the history behind it. I mean, clearly there is, and it's been widely researched and looked into, but it does make me, makes me feel a little bit embarrassed about my, lack of understanding.
Yeah, for someone that is such a hardcore believer, I'm realizing I have a lot of learning to do.
But I guess it kind of ties into so many other things, just being open-minded. And, mm-hmm. I mean, keep going back to the ocean. There's a lot of weird stuff down there.
Tons of stuff.
The one thing that is, in my mind, very difficult to reason with mm-hmm. is that, I mean, clearly we've pretty much screwed Earth's land. Mm-hmm. So how have we not encountered, or maybe there have been and it's just been
maybe covered they're just up? Smarter than us.
Wouldn't put it past
them. I know. Well, maybe they're able to, like, navigate and avoid contact with humans because they're elevated in some way.
Yeah, you know? Or just, like, have better senses, even.
Right. Like, it certainly could be. This is one of those things, like, there are, looking at this footage in particular, there are definitely things about Patterson that make me question what was really going on and, like, what was his motivation.
Yeah.
And it does make sense that if he was simply motivated by fame, then, yeah, this is the perfect hoax that he pulled off.
Yeah.
But looking at the actual footage, there's too many questions to say that this isn't real. And I'm okay with kind of just leaving it at that. Like, we don't know. And I don't think that there's anything wrong with not knowing.
We don't know a lot of things. Yeah.
So I'm just going to add this to the list.
And just let it be.
All right. Well, I think that, I mean, it kind of, it adheres to our general consensus when it comes down to these things. If you want to boil it down, do you believe this footage is real?
I think I have to say no, which I usually don't say no.
Yeah.
Again, do I want to believe it's real? Of course. But do I have enough to say this is real footage? No. But that doesn't change my belief in Sasquatch.
No. Yeah, I'm just saying specifically this footage. It's so hard. Just the amount of bullshit around it.
Yeah.
Makes it really difficult. I mean, like we've said, we've argued that it looks very realistic. Mm-hmm. And to be able to pull that feat,
it's impressive.
I don't know. I guess I really just don't know. It's all such new information.
Pick one.
I've got to say no also. But it's so freaking tough because imagine if we came across Sasquatch in mm-hmm. real life and got, like, video. Mm-hmm. People would look at our entire history and be like, yeah. Like,
they're fucking nuts. Yeah.
And they've been doing this since they were kids, and they, if I have to choose, I say no. I really don't want to. I guess, you know, when they ask that question, like, if you could ask God one question, what would it be? It wouldn't even be, is Sasquatch real? It's,
is the Patterson lived footage real? Like, I feel that, though. Yeah. I want to know. I just don't know.
It's mind-boggling. It's like when you start thinking of deep space. So.
Oh, shit. Okay. But tell us, what do you believe? Is there more to the story that we don't know? We would love to hear it. And tell us, if you had to pick, just based off of what you know, if you had to choose yes or no, this footage is real, what would you say? Maybe we'll actually do a poll for the first time.
Ooh.
That'd be good. And you can find that on Instagram and Facebook at Something Weird Podcast.
Along with that feedback, we just want to hear your stories. We love them, whether it be about your weird uncle. That just sounds weird. We want to hear weird stories, though, and particularly about Sasquatch. Storytelling and legends, whether they be real or not, it's part of all of our excitement and lives, so we want to hear them. And if you enjoyed any bit or all of our podcasts, please let us know with a big 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. We noticed that we got 1 2-star rating.
Okay.
All right, probably haters. Fair, but
probably deserved.
The rest are glowing. I love those reviews. And it just makes a difference. I mean, we're clearly doing this for fun.
Yeah.
And it just helps keep it going. We want the truth out there for more and more.
This was a really special week for us. Not only were we together in the same place, in the same state, But we covered one piece of probably our favorite paranormal kind of entity. So thank you for listening and joining in on this kind of special occasion with us. We appreciate those of you who are coming back each week and listening to our ridiculous rants. So thank you again. And until next time,
stay weirdy.
Yee.
Yee.